Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Talks. Today is the third day of July 2018, and I'm happy to be with you on a Tuesday, usual day. We're here until 1 p.m. The team this morning, myself and Dennis Johnson, all alone in the studio. He will be the person that will answer the phone. He will also be the person that will cut you off when you attempt to defame someone's character. And I am the person that will encourage you to defame someone's character. We'll have a good time until 1 p.m. The call numbers, I believe you know them, 434-1790. You can also email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. You can also use the BrassTalks at starcomnetwork.net facility. And the chat is available to you, 266-IVOB. That's 266-IVOB. So, we're going to have some good conversation, and I think as normal, I am expected to make some prefatory remarks. I'll come regionally, and then I'll come home. So, regionally, announcement has been made that Mr. Nazim Burke, who was formerly Minister of Finance in Grenada, he is now the leader of the NDC, and he was the leader of the NDC in the last election. He previously was, I believe, a deputy leader of the NDC. And he has been known to Grenadian politics for some time. He has indicated that he is bowing out of politics. And to that I say, well done. Certainly in the wake of the last election, I expressed to you that I think that the days of Nazim Burke were over. Certainly when one does not succeed in winning a single seat, the likelihood that one can prevail as leader ends. And I think that Nazim Burke has been in the vineyard of politics, and he has been part of Grenada's revolutionary past. Fairly decent guy, and he has served at many levels, and he unfortunately has failed not once, not twice, but thrice. He was Minister of Finance, and he seemed to have failed in that regard. Now he has indicated that his political career is at an end, and it is consistent with comments I would have made in the wake of the 2015 election, and I'm happy that he has followed the advice, albeit belatedly. And I would also say that I'm hoping that a gentleman called Prime Minister Fernando Stewart, who is also in a similar position to Nazim Burke, will also take my advice and seek an early leave. The significant thing about Burke's departure now is that Burke is leaving early. There's a convention that will be scheduled later, but Burke has saw it fit, firstly, to identify persons to sit in the Senate other than himself. And then he has now indicated that he is leaving altogether, which will create an opportunity for the NDC to take fresh guard, to have a conference, take fresh guard, and see what the future holds. Of course, my choice for the leadership of the NDC is no longer an option, because Mr. Peter David is now serving as Minister of Foreign Affairs in Grenada, and as a result, he's no longer available for that post, and presumably he will not be interested in it anymore. So we have that situation, and we'll see how that goes, but for the time being, we need to watch Grenada and see who are the faces that emerge. I have my own ideas. There's a youngster in Carriacou and Petit Martinique, who I thought did extremely well in the last election, quite young, but certainly his performance was the most impressive in relation to his own individual swing, far better than that of the same Nazim Burke, and I believe that he should be in pole position to take the leadership of the NDC, although he apparently is not favored, which is entirely unsurprising, because generally you tend not to favor the persons that seem to have the greatest potential. So I'm hoping that the old faces in the NDC do not return. We have some old faces knocking around, and I am hoping that none of them will emerge, and that they will see a new face to the politics of Grenada in another couple of weeks. So that's Grenada. Bringing things home, I have not professed my love for a woman on this program for a long time. Indeed, I haven't professed my love for a woman, period, for a long time. But I am at a stage today where I find it necessary to profess my love for a lady who is now acting as Prime Minister of Barbados with respect to comments that she made yesterday. Of course, there are many good reasons for us to like Santia Bradshaw, not least of which is the fact that she attended the Christchurch Foundation School. But more importantly, she has taken a position that I believe is a position that is long overdue regarding corporal punishment, and she has signaled her intention to move in the direction of banning corporal punishment, at least in schools. So that's his first step. The second step would, of course, be banning corporal punishment, period. But baby steps, and I'm happy that even having been in the office for only 30 days, she has taken a position on something which previous ministers of education seem unwilling to take a position on over a long period of time. You will recall that Minister Jones, who was a previous office holder, took a position that teachers ought to have better ways of punishing children, which was, of course, an expression of his own views regarding corporal punishment. But he, however, did not take a position regarding banning. And I'm happy that those words were used by Santia Bradshaw, the Honorable Santia Bradshaw. I want to congratulate her, and I want to wish her well in terms of her efforts to ban corporal punishment. She has an extremely willing and able ally in no less a person than myself. I have worked tirelessly with UNICEF in that regard. We have done several studies across the region looking at the issue of corporal punishment, looking at the declining popularity, and looking at particular peculiarities, like the fact that corporal punishment seems to appeal to persons who are less well-educated, less well-off economically. It appeals more to women than men. It seems to have a peculiar appeal based on demographics that suggests to me that there is something fundamentally wrong with corporal punishment. So I'm happy with Santia Bradshaw today for many reasons, and I'm hoping that she will not be daunted in her efforts to deal with this. On matters of education, we have another interesting phenomena, and this is the days of the brown cow seem to be over. And of course, the word brown cow is affectionately used with reference to persons who attended Ellerslie Secondary School. And I say affectionately because it is said with no offense. I believe Mr. David Ellis would be one of those such persons that would have attended this noble institution. I see pictures floating around suggesting to me that Ellerslie has now changed their uniform, and persons are suggesting that the Ellerslie students will now look like junior Common Mirror students. And I think we have now Common Mirror heavy and Common Mirror light. I don't know. I'm a fan of change in many regards, but I am not sure that this is the type of change that is sought. I had a conversation with a few Ellerslie students, and I have a good few Ellerslie friends. And they're not happy about it either. You know, the idea of not having to press pleats is something, of course, desirable. But when it comes down to it, you know, it's change. And I don't know. If the day came that the foundation uniform, yellow as it is, was changed, I would have some serious problems with it. And I often wonder, why is it necessary for us to be doing this kind of thing? You know, it is part of the tradition. And the uniform is part of the tradition. And without good reason, I struggle to understand why we're talking about changing the brown cows into khaki cows, as the case may be. This is Dr. Brass Tax, 434-1790. We take a break, and when we come back, we continue with the program. Welcome back to welcome to Dr. Brass Tax. Let's start our conversation and say good morning and welcome to the first caller. Good morning and welcome.
Blessed be my brother.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
This is your supposed friend here, Mr. Ivory Culture.
You say suppose? What you say suppose?
Yeah. Well, you know, I have to say suppose, because one day we'll be good, next day we'll just be whatever.
We would only not agree on one thing, which is the agriculture point, but that's not going to change.
You prefer to let it die.
Indeed, yes.
Oh my God, Peter, that's so sad. I'm not like that is a vegan. You know, you sadden me when you say that. You know, you really sadden me when you say those kind of things and you live the lifestyle that you do.
Well, anyhow, you know, it is what it is.
It is, exactly. It is what it is. Yeah. Peter, I don't know. Sometimes I want to stay away from Brass Tacks, and there's so much things to talk about. There's so much people out there that say they can't get up on these areas, and I am the advocate for certain people. I don't know why I think obligated to speak. And before I get too deeply involved, some persons from Carters in St. John said to say hello to you.
Okay, because thank
Ben
you.
David, Ben, you know what I mean? When David Thompson was alive, they say you used to be up that side regularly, and they said that they like your style, and I am a man who gets onto the program. I was in discussion with them post-election, and, you know, I've still been in discussion with them now that the Democratic Party has lost the seat, and they said make sure to give you a shout. All the fellas from Caritas in St. John, you would know who they are.
I do,
and
yes.
They know you.
Huh? All right.
Right. I just said to make sure to give you a shout out.
Mm-hmm.
I want to join you with giving my lady friend there, now the Minister of Education, and now the acting Prime Minister, well, my wonderful Prime Minister is off doing the honorable business in her decision as well. For doing a good job so far. As you say, the administration is still young, and as I said before, I am going to be coming out with the Minister of the Month every month as time goes by, Peter.
Okay.
Last month, I give it to Abrahams, because you know I give it to him because of the source issue. I think that he has done a good job. Can't give it to him alone, but at the end of the day, he is the minister. I still find it a little ticklish that the general manager was the man there under the former administration and still could not find it fit to get half of the things done with the resources that they had and the time that they had it to done it. I know he is here now to get some of this glory. I still find it a little ticklish, but you see, there's certain things that you got to leave alone. I know you understand where I want to go, but I will leave that alone for the time being, Peter. Another observation, Peter, is that you said that you have a man who attended foundation, which is right?
I did, yes, I did.
Yes, yeah. You did, and Sandia attended that school as well.
She did, a few years after.
But sadly, I cannot give praise to a third lady that I would like to give it to, who sat shortly on a moderating chair, who lambasted you and I and the majority of the Barbados Labour Party supporters. And I understand now she's gone in somewhere in exile, and I would love her to come forward after this 30 love and let me hear her voice.
Yeah.
Because she know enough for me, she know enough for you, and she know enough for everybody under the Barbados Labour Party ticket.
It's true.
So there's enough of them that hide it, Peter. You know, when you get in this situation, they say, this body can't come back to the air. Where's the two shame they're going to do it? So why? Where are all of the Democratic Labour Party people that was lambasting all of us and painting the Barbados Labour Party for every single thing that they've done? I want to hear Straker's tenantry. I want to hear Undecided. I want to hear the Trinidad Woman and a lot more of those Democrats who lambaste this area on a daily basis. They're not coming forward. They're not coming forward. Mm. I need them to come, Peter. They need to come.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Not that you, I'm not pouring gasoline in fire, but they need to come to this forum.
I agree. You know, Ms. Agriculture, I always say, yeah, look, in the wake of the last election, 2013, I faced a lot of abuse from people,
even election night. Yeah,
and I made it my business. I was particularly busy after because I had some regional commitments that I had been putting off. But I made it my business to come on Brass Talks the first day after that I was available or I was able to. I came on and I spent the better part of an hour on the phone, you know, responding to people who felt that I needed to give account of myself.
Yeah,
I made sure after the election that I also wrote a review of the polls, the performance, the election, the outcome and whatnot, because I think it's important if you're going to be a serious analyst that you have to present yourself for scrutiny both before and after. And
exactly.
I'm particularly disappointed that individuals who did not present themselves, who presented themselves as analysts, have not been forthcoming. So I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah, and you know, thing that's hurt me, and wherever people open their mouth, they are the most highly educated people,
mm-hmm.
and everybody is out there talking, dun-dun, to went school at the standpoint, or went school in summer. No, Peter, it's not a joke thing, you know, because you know me, you've had discussion with me for years, and I'm a serious man when it comes to certain things. Peter, I also want to go and say, I want Barbados to look and really see what's going on. Because, Peter, right now, I get a little lambasted. You know why?
Mm-hmm.
Because I have campus, I have support on political platforms. And there are persons who were on the Democratic Labour Party ticket that I win over the hearts and I make them vote for the Barbados Labour Party. Now they're cursing me and painting me that I come and bring a mini budget here that murder everybody. But Peter, you really think that budget murdering somebody? Mm-hmm. Barbados do not have no money. That woman has working so hard. You know, she is, you know Miss Motley personally, Peter. I know that for a fact. Because I've had discussion with her, and I know her whole family, and I don't want them to feel that they are better off than anybody else. People of character and integrity. And I've had discussion with them before she became Prime Minister, and I had discussion with them now that she, no, we're not, because she's busy now with the family still. you know?
Mm-hmm.
But people want to make it look like, you know, oh my God, when the land based Democratic Labour Party, where they put all the NRSL, where they put 60% upon water, they move that from 15% to 17.5. Peter, this economy was raped, Peter. Mm-hmm. And you know that, and mm-hmm. I know that. This economy was land based. And persons who are in high offices was trying to tell the Democratic Labour Party, you all are going down the wrong road. These people get money to do business, government business, Peter. And there's still a lot of money that is unaccounted for. You know? And people run and go along, get vote out. And yes, I am not going to say, I know if they could get back any of this money, but I would like to know a day that, before God call me home, that some of the money that have dwindled away, I ain't locking up the body waste, I'm locking them up. Seize some assets or bring back some $5 or $6 million ahead to help back this economy. And that's what I would like to see personally. I'm not pointing our fingers at the body and seeing a body misappropriated government purse, Peter.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Mr. Agriculture. We're going to have to run. I want to thank you for your contribution this morning, for engaging us. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Hello, hi. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing? Good to hear you.
Not too bad. Nice to hear you as well. Look, Peter, I got an issue here, okay?
And it's not to do with flogging.
No, I ain't got nothing to do with flogging. Nothing at all to do with flogging. But I was told yesterday, when people went to register their vehicle, that they still was confronted with this whole thing. I believe from the outset it was a nonsense, and I was made to understand yesterday that this thing is still in place.
Mm.
Something, a stupid act that the last government imposed upon the property owners of vehicles, that is still in place. Look, they got something called BACTAS.
Mm-hmm.
That don't have any ending. It don't have any ending. And the officers at MTW, right, are happy to tell you, or rejoiceful in telling you, hey, you owe 10 years back tax. You owe the government $2,500. You know, where do it end? And it get worse. It get worse. I know people might be able to say, hey, you could write a letter and an officer will come at the property and or come at the location and see the vehicle not in use for a period of time. That's one side. But it's not as easy as that, you know, Peter. Peter, you're still at the mercy of that officer that come, you know,
mm-hmm.
and visually look at that vehicle, because the officer could come up there in a bad, could come where the vehicle is located on a bad day. He might not have the best days of his life, you know, and he could pronounce on that situation the same thing. Man, I don't believe that this air didn't drive him out. You understand? And you're dead in the water. I am saying that I believe the same time you look at eradicating the registration or the licensing, this annual thing, I believe that back tax should also be looked at, because that is murdering people. That caused a lot of good vehicles that could have come back on the road end up at bees or down by garbage master.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you need to look at that, because it's an unfair thing. I'm not saying that if you had the fortune to drive but you care for a whole year or your vehicle for a whole year and you get caught, that you shouldn't got to pay. I'm not saying that. I am saying, where's the claim at?
I'm not understanding this thing, though, because if you look at the thing legally, right, and you are supposed to pay tax last year,
mm-hmm.
the rule is changed that as of this year, you don't pay tax.
Right.
The presumption is that you were still supposed to have paid tax last year. And the fact is that the only time they can catch you now is if you attempt to transfer the vehicle or sell it. And as a result, that's exactly what's happening, that if you transfer it and you hadn't paid tax last year, when tax was supposed to be paid, you got paid. No.
But, Peter?
But it seems fairly straightforward to me. It's harsh, but it seems straightforward that all of those people who thought they could get away with not paying tax, all they had to do is just don't sell the cars.
Peter,
Because once you tend to sell it, you can get catch.
But get catch for doing what?
For not paying it.
But for not paying, listen, you have your car put down. A friend of mine just bought a car that was put down in the garage for 5 years.
Yeah, but if you had it put down, then it should be waived.
If
you put it down, it should be waived. Because if you put down the car for 2 weeks so that you won't have to pay it, no, that's different.
I'm not talking about that at all.
Right, if you put down your car for 3 years and you decide now that you don't have to pay to register it, you're going to pick it up and start driving it again, right? Listen, then naturally you will have to pay for the 3 years.
Peter, a retired national, right?
Right.
Come back here, buy a car, and then, as you know, that these retired nationals, for the most part, are Asian people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this retired national... say the semi driving is a challenge. I can put down my baby in the garage and I can keep that there to look at off it, just go and wash off or clean out or whatever, start the engine ever so often. Anyhow, he gets
Dennis is just telling me that if you're gonna do that you have to notify the licensing authority that the vehicle is not on the road.
But Dennis missed the point. I'm saying to Dennis, right, that you notify the licensing authority through the way of a letter. Right?
Mm-hmm.
To ensure that, yes, you got it put down. You got the vehicle put down. But still, and it is not an easy thing, you know, that when you decide to sell that vehicle or you decide to bring back that vehicle on the road, right, the officer got to come at your place and it ain't coming, he ain't coming next week, you know, or she ain't coming next week, you know. It can take at least 3 months and another 3 months before you get an answer. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I am saying to you, whilst the grass is growing, the horse is starving. All right?
But if you didn't need the car for 3 years to put down, how come all of a sudden you need it in 3 months?
But you might want to get it to a relative.
Come off it, listen.
Come off it.
No, I tell you, come off it, because it does sound to me like people trying to think.
But trying to walk.
Right, because all of a sudden, no, you were not interested in driving or selling the vehicle. And all of a sudden, no, you just catch a VAP, so whoops, you can drive or sell the vehicle.
You're trying a thing,
and I mean, I don't have a problem with a man trying a thing, but the point is, if you get catch, you get catch, and again, catch, no.
Dave, Peter, you old master, you decide to put that left at the mechanic.
No, I give it away.
Because you buy a new car now.
Right.
You guy pass run by the mechanic 3 years later and say, hey, Bob, I know this guy, blah, Peter, but I'm going to check Peter, like he done with it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you are notified the boy that you put down the car.
I understand what you mean, but because I had been finished with it, so it's at that point that the person who picked it had to decide whether or not they want to think. Because I mean,
why that would incur about tax?
Because if I left my vehicle at the mechanic and I said I'm finished with it, it is for the mechanic to decide what to do. I had a situation many years ago where I got in an accident, right, sir? And this thing that happened to me, I got in a vehicular accident. The car was totaled to the best of my knowledge. I left the car at the mechanic, the insurance paid me, and I got a new vehicle, right? About 3 or 4 years later, one of the mechanics at the mechanic's place spoke to me and told me, I actually repaired your vehicle, and I'm driving it, and I now want to license it legally. We're driving it illegally. He was trying to think too, right?
Uh-huh.
He said, I want to license it legally. So I need a letter from you saying that you have no further interest in the vehicle and that you've sold it to me, which is technically speaking untrue, because I never really sold it. I just left it there. In the same way that you say is people leave the car by the mechanic. My understanding is that the vehicle would have been auctioned, and whatever value it had, the insurance company would have gone, because there was very little value in it, as far as I understood. Right? He was able to use, through his ingenuity, to fix it up and whatnot. Now, in a situation like that, right, I believe that there would be some discretion given, largely because you're looking at a vehicle that was totaled and it was brought back to life, so to speak. You're talking about a situation in which someone takes a perfectly good functioning car and puts it down.
I'm so glad that you go on there.
All of a sudden, no, that person wants to bring that car back on the road. Extenuating circumstances, the licensing authority can exercise discretion, as I understand it. But to me, then, the extenuating circumstances, if you had a car put down for 3 months, all of a sudden, no, you want to get a license? You're trying to think.
Peter, I am so glad that you're gone there.
Let's go there.
Hold on a second. I ain't going to take long on this.
Mm-hmm.
I do buy damaged cars as a way of living. That's my thing. That's my daily living thing. Huh? Buy damaged cars, repair, and I buy damaged cars so people repair them and put them back on the road.
Right. Now, nothing wrong with that.
No, but that's totally legal. I am saying to you that you get a letter from an insurance or agent who, at that time, called an auctioneer, point of sale. You go to NTW now to inspect and license the car. You take 2 or 3 years to bring that car back on the road. You know this NTW can still tell you. This is the first time that you've been able to get that car fixed and get back on the road, you know. You know NTW can tell you, you still got to pay about that.
Or alternatively, they will do an inspection. Sir, Wesley, I'm seeing a note here from someone saying you cannot just park a vehicle. The vehicle has to be on the blocks with the wheels off. And in that case, you apply to MTW for a cover letter to prove that the vehicle is off the road. Wesley, if it is that you took 2 years to repair the vehicle and bring it back to life, I believe that the NTW should offer you some level of concession. Because it was off the road. But nobody was off the road.
I should not be at the mercy of NTW.
But the question of being at the mercy, if there's a discretion to be exercised, they got to exercise it on some basis, but and they would need to do an inspection.
I got a letter stating the date purchase.
Right, and Wesley, I am saying that if they are able to verify that, I think that you are well entitled to have a discretion waived in your favor.
A lot of people out here again. Penalized by that.
I think the penalizing come in with regard to people who are deciding now that since you don't have to pay this thing, they're going to put cars back on the road and sell them.
But why, okay, all right, where's climax come? Where's the climax?
I don't like the use of the word climax in that context.
You can back tax a man for 20 years for a vehicle. That's what you're saying.
But how many vehicles you know you've been driving for 20 years?
It should be an anniversary date. If they scared off the road for 2 years, listen, we can charge it 1-2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? For 5 years, we can only charge it 2 years. But you want to tell me you can charge a man for 15 years? Right? I'm saying to you, is it unfair tax?
Somebody is saying here, I have a car that was purchased in June 27, 2017. Sometime in June, I was told that the minister said that under those circumstances, you could put down the car for the last few days. The car is computerized, and the dealer can verify that the car was not used during the last week. I believe a letter could be had from the dealer to verify, and I'd like to know what can be done under these circumstances. What do you think, sir?
Look, you were talking, my head had gone forward. I am saying...
You had gone forward?
I want to ventilate this, right? Mm. I want to say to you, right, that I believe it has been then, and it still is today, that this whole notion about back tax, I think, is an unfair situation that should never be in the first place. I remember speaking that it right or it wrong. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, it's wrong. Okay.
Wesley, we would agree to disagree. I think that there's a discretion that can be exercised. And if people are offering me concrete evidence regarding instances in which the discretion has not been exercised, or alternatively, the discretion has taken too long to be exercised, then I can perhaps be compelled. But from what I am seeing, it is a clear situation where the laws are being interpreted in a particular way. The idea of back tax, my understanding is that once the vehicle is not on the road, you shouldn't have to pay. That's reasonable. If the vehicle is on the road, you ought to pay it. So if you don't pay it, the person that buy it from you would also be liable to pay it. So it's kind of like you got to be careful when you buy a vehicle. They don't buy a pig in a bike. And I know you know about pigs because you are so smart. So, Wesley, we can chat again. Thanks a lot for calling. We take a break and come right back.
These are the biggest sports stories of the past 4 weeks. This is Sports Month in Review in association with Frontline Trading, Salter St. George, for all your building materials and hardware products.
Milton Lynch A withstood the challenge of People's Cathedral to retain the Barbados Chess Federation Primary Inter-School Championship by the narrowest of margins. In an enthralling battle over the final 3 rounds of games, Milton Lynch emerged winners by 1 point in a tense finish to the championship at Harrison College. Serena Williams pulled out of the French Open before her 4th round match with Maria Sharapova because of an injury that affected her serve. The 23-time Grand Slam winner recently returned to tennis after giving birth to her first child but looked in good form in the opening matches. Australian coach Justin Langer says his side will not stop sledging but will focus on creating a great dressing room following the ball tampering scandal in South Africa.
We're going to create the environment where it's a great change room, where the expectations are high, and all cultures is behaviour. So we're going to make sure our behaviours are really good on the field and off the field.
Two young Barbadian footballers got the chance of a lifetime when they travelled to Russia for the Gazprom Football for Friendship program. Kamal Bryan of Pinelands Youth Academy and Sachin Clark of the National Sports Council team joined young persons from 210 other countries as they were taken through training sessions and workshops with some of the world's best young coaches and famous players.
Sports Month in Review, in association with Front Lang Trading, Salter St. George, for all your building materials and hardware products.